All right, everybody, welcome back to your Home Building Coach podcast, also known as the Awaken Homeowner Mission. If you've been following along with our Understanding Design Limitations series, you know we've been deep diving into all the rules and restrictions that can affect your custom home or major remodel project. We've covered zoning districts, floor area ratios, setbacks, height restrictions, the infamous HOA rules, all the ways cities and regulations constrain what you can build. But today we're tackling the classification rule that can take all of the restrictions and amplify them. So here's the thing. Your remodel might not be a remodel in the eyes of your city. It might be classified as new construction. And that classification can change everything, your timeline, your budget, and your code requirements. And if this rule isn't understood to begin with, this could be one of the biggest blindsides in planning a project. And I personally have dealt with this more than once, unfortunately, with projects that were these hidden rules and regulations. Even as a professional, if you're not familiar with all of these, this can really upturn a project. So right now, I'm going to call this our final episode in Understanding Design Limitations series. There's a few more lurking about, but I'll probably circle back to those later. And it's a perfect way to wrap up because project classification is like the meta rule that sits above all the others. It can make a non-conforming home suddenly need to conform. It can require full code compliance when you thought you were just adding a bedroom. So let's dive into this critical topic that protects you from one of the most expensive surprises in home building and remodeling. All right, let's start with a question. When is a remodel not a remodel? And here's the answer. When your building department says it's new construction, and here's why that matters. So here's what classification means. Project classification is how your city categorizes your work. It sounds simple, but this one determination affects everything. Which codes apply, which approvals you need, what timeline you're looking at, and how much your project will cost. Think of it like this. If you're building on an empty lot, the classification is really easy. It's new construction. But what happens when you're keeping part of your home and adding to it? What if you're demolishing 60% of it and keeping 40%? What if you're replacing all the windows, adding a second story, and expanding the footprint? That's where classification gets tricky. You know, cities didn't create these classification systems to make your life difficult. They created them for safety and fairness. And here's the logic. If you're substantially changing a structure, shouldn't that structure meet current safety codes? If you're essentially building a new home but calling it a remodel, should you be exempt from current fire safety requirements? Should you be able to ignore setback rules that every home has to follow? The city's perspective is if you're doing enough work that you're basically creating a new home, you should build it to new home standards. That's the core idea behind project classification. If you're considering or planning a major remodel, and a major remodel could be an existing, we'll just say 1,600 square foot home, and you're planning to renovate the whole interior of the home, you're planning to add onto the back of the home and possibly even upstairs, and you're adding 801 square feet of space. And this is a simplified look at this classification rule. So you're taking a 1,600 square foot home and you're converting it into a 2,401 square foot home. This is a big trigger for the city planning departments and building departments. The idea here is to let you know that so that if you're planning a project like I'm talking about today, you can massage that design so that it does not trigger that. Now, it's not quite as simple as that, but that is one of the first things that the cities will look at. And unfortunately, each city has their own methods of calculating and determining what 50% means. And you're going to want to understand this if planning to undergo a major renovation. So most cities use three basic categories. Of course, there's new construction, empty lot to a finished home. Everything must meet the current building code and the zoning codes, and everything must go through the planning department prior to going to the building department. And then you have minor remodels. You're working with the existing, not changing the structure significantly, and generally subject to lighter requirements. And then there's the major remodel, or also a term that's used a lot, is substantial improvement. This is the gray area. You're doing significant work, maybe adding square footage, maybe removing load-bearing walls, maybe completely renovating. This category is where classification battles happen. Because once you cross into a major remodel territory, you might face new construction requirements. So in my book, section 2.340, I discuss, you know, how one homeowner discovered their addition was being classified as new construction, triggering full code compliance. They hadn't budgeted for it. This is what we call remodel classification. And the building department has specific formulas to determine which category your project falls into. So now that you understand what classification is and why it matters, let's talk about the most common rules cities use to make the determination of the 50% rule. This is where it gets really interesting and really important to your planning. And there's another thing you're going to need to factor, which we'll probably talk about in the future, and we will definitely talk about in the future, is the term substantial completion stems from the federal organization called FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, I guess it is. And if you're in a flood zone, or if you're in a coastal property down at the beach level, or just a flood zone, designated flood zone, if you're planning to build, remodel an existing home in a flood zone, this gets really complicated. And if you surpass the 50% rule plus other FEMA regulations, you could be required to elevate your entire home, or at least elevate the addition portion, which is kind of crazy. So the 50% rule is the most common classification trigger in the country. But here's where it kind of gets complicated. There's no single 50% rule. Different cities calculate it completely differently. Let's start with the simplest version because it's the most common. If you increase your home's living area by more than 50%, your project may be classified as new construction. So even though you're submitting your project as a remodel, and unbeknownst to your design pros and yourself, you've increased the home by more than 50%, which is common today, where we're doing major renovations and not tearing down existing homes, but just in some cases doubling the size of the home. You need to know that this is now considered a new construction. And knowing this now means you may actually elect to demolish your existing home and rebuild rather than trying to conform to all of the existing structures and inferior elements of that structure that can really limit the design. Heck, you might as well demolish the building. At least consider it if you think you're going to turn your 1,600 square foot home into a 3,200 square foot home. So if you have an 1,800 square foot home and you add 1,000 square feet, you've just crossed that 50% threshold. The city looks at this and says, well, you're not just adding on, you're creating what's essentially a new home. Time to meet new home standards. So why 50%, right? I mean, if you're expanding by more than half, you're essentially building a new home. And this is the standard 50% rule remodel threshold that homeowners need to understand before designing their addition. Many California cities like Saratoga use this method. Now, some California cities and other cities across the country, some California cities, especially in the Bay Area, use a more complex calculation that looks beyond just square footage. And I have personally dealt with these, and it is an extremely time-consuming, laborious, complicated process to determine if you really are, in fact, remodeling more than 50%. It's not just a square footage calculation. So they calculate square footage and linear footage of materials being removed or impacted, and sometimes also square footage of materials that are being impacted. So this could include siding, roofing, exterior walls, interior walls, flooring. So why? So to capture projects where you're not adding much space, but you're substantially affecting the existing structure. Much harder to calculate, requires detailed construction plans. So let's say you're not adding any square footage, but you're removing all the exterior siding, replacing the roof, and reconfiguring interior walls. Under the new square footage rule, you're fine. Under the linear footage methods, you might have just triggered the 50% threshold because of all the materials you were affecting. So I want you to be thinking about your design. And if you feel like, and you can be honest with yourself, that your home is going to look like a brand new home when you're done, that you won't even be able to recognize it, whether you're adding on or not, you might fall into this category. Now, the FEMA rule that can affect your classification of your project is sometimes adopted by cities for themselves to determine what the classification of the project is, and therefore what restrictions you have, what submittal requirements you have, and what building codes apply. So the FEMA rule, especially in flood-prone areas, particularly Florida and coastal regions, there's a completely different calculation, but it's not just limited to coastal regions. This could be affected by any kind of watersheds, rivers, lakes, runoffs, anything that would be classified as a flood zone. And you'll be able to determine that by simply going to the FEMA website and looking up your property. It's pretty easy to do. And if you know that you're in a flood zone, you better be careful. And this is one of the first things that your design professional will and should do before you start digging into the design. And don't assume you're not in a flood zone just because you're not near anything. You never know. So always check. So what happens is they look at 50% of the structure's pre-improvement market value. And that's the structure value only. Land is not included. If your repair or improvement costs exceed 50% of the structure value, full code compliance is required. This is primarily enforced under FEMA regulations for flood zones. So like, here's a scenario from Florida. After Hurricane Ian, homeowners with $300,000 in damage to homes valued at $500,000 thought they could just repair and rebuild as is. But because the damage exceeded 50% of the structure's value, they were required to elevate the entire home to current flood elevation standards. That's an additional $100,000 to $200,000 they weren't expecting. I personally have dealt with this on more than one project, but in particular a project on the Pacific Coast in the Monterey area. And unfortunately, it was not determined or understood that this rule applied to a particular project. And in this case, it was compounded because it was a townhouse development where there was another building attached to it. And the intentions of the homeowner were to completely renovate the interior, bring it up to high level finishes. We weren't adding any square footage, but the value of the project exceeded the 50% rule. And therefore, we were not able to actually do the project as designed because we were required to lift the structure up and we could not lift the entire structure up because there was another unit attached to it. What was the result? I had to do a major redesign and step back and scale the project way down. And don't think you can just phase out a project because they've got that figured out too. We'll continue on with this and I'll explain some of those more details to you. So that is what we call substantial improvement calculations under major renovation building codes. Now here's something also that blindsides homeowners. Like I just mentioned about the FEMA rules, some cities don't just look at your current project. They look back in time. I've dealt with this personally in a project in the city of Palo Alto where we were trying to maintain the valuation of the project under the 50% rule, but the city went back, I believe it was 5 years. So some jurisdictions have 1 to 5 year, what they call look back periods, and they add up all the permits and improvements during that period. And if the cumulative total exceeds 50%, classification changes. I've seen this happen. A homeowner does a kitchen remodel, then a year later wants to add a bedroom. Each project individually is under the threshold, but the city adds them together and says, over the past 2 years, you've improved this home by 60% of its value. Time for full code compliance. The homeowner had no idea this was coming. So these look-back provisions are designed to prevent incremental avoidance of classification rules. So you can't get a little too creative with your design strategy and implementation unless you plan to do it over a longer period of time. So one of the first questions you're going to want to ask when you are planning a project with your design professional or go into the planning department of your city or county and ask them to explain or provide documentation on the classification process of remodel projects. So the 50% rule isn't just one rule. It's a concept that every jurisdiction interprets differently. And that's why you probably must talk to your specific city and planning building departments before you begin designing your project. And you might even want to think about researching this before you buy a property if that's the mode you're in. If you're in a flood zone, if you're planning to completely do a renovation and don't want to have the city telling you how much you need to bring it up to code, you might want to rethink the purchase of that property. So what triggers classifications in Saratoga might not trigger it in Palo Alto. What matters in Florida doesn't apply in Colorado unless it has to do with specifically the FEMA flood zone rules, because I believe all cities across the country are forced to adopt that in order to comply with FEMA. So if there ever is a catastrophic event, the homeowners are covered. So now that you understand how cities calculate whether you've crossed that threshold, let's talk about what happens when you do, because this is where your budget and timeline can get completely derailed if you're not prepared. All right, so here's where the rubber meets the road. You've crossed that 50% threshold and your project is now classified as new construction or substantial improvement. What does that actually mean for your project? So let's break it down. Point one, fire suppression systems. The most expensive surprise for most homeowners are being forced to install a fire sprinkler system in their home because they've crossed that threshold. Now, many jurisdictions require fire sprinkler systems in new single-family homes. If your project is reclassified, sprinklers may be required throughout your entire home, not just the addition. This cost could be, heck, it could be anywhere from, I've seen some of this in the past, but anywhere from $5 to $10 a square foot for the retrofit installation. And that could eat right into your budget. Fire sprinklers aren't the only system that might need upgrading. Your electrical panel may need to be upgraded to current capacity standards. HVAC systems must meet current efficiency requirements. Plumbing may need updates to meet current codes. If existing systems are outdated, they may need full replacement rather than repair. So your home has a 100-amp electrical panel, which is really common from 1985. It's worked fine for decades, but now that your project is classified as new construction, current code requires 200-amp service for a home of your size. There's another $8,000 probably. And then the energy codes have gotten dramatically stricter over the past 20 years. Your entire home may need to come up to a current energy code, not just the addition that you're doing on your project. This can include upgraded insulation in walls and attic, new windows throughout the home, upgraded HVAC efficiency, air sealing requirements. Some cities offer compliance paths that are less expensive than full upgrades, but you need to know about them. And as I'm going here, I'm getting bigger and bigger into some of the issues. But here's the one that catches people completely off guard. Existing nonconformities. So your existing home right now might not meet the current setback requirements. It was built before current rules. As a remodel, you could keep the nonconformity. As new construction, you might need to bring it into compliance or demonstrate you can't expand in that direction. This can affect setbacks, heights, lot coverage, and parking requirements. So let's say your home was built in 1950 or 60 or 70 and you're 3 feet from the property sideline. Your current code requires a 5-foot setback. Under remodel rules, you're grandfathered in technically, and you'll have to verify that with each of your individual cities. Under new construction classification, the city might require you to move the wall to meet current setbacks, and which could mean demolishing more of your existing home than you planned. I personally dealt with this in a project in Saratoga, California, where the homeowner wanted to completely remodel the entire home, add add square footage on multiple ends of the building. And the left side of the structure actually was not meeting the current setback requirement. So we had the existing foundation on the left-hand side. We demolished the structure all the way down to the existing foundation, added on in multiple areas, and then rebuilt the home. On the left-hand side, we had to move that entire foundation in, I believe it was 1 or 2 feet to meet the code, the current code, because it was classified as a new home. In hindsight, I would have proposed to demolish the entire home and start from scratch. Although it would be more expensive to demolish the entire home because of the demolition work and the additional foundation work, overall quality of the structure of the home would be superior. And then I'm going to mention the other thing that I've talked about, which kind of crosses into a future episode, and that's the FEMA regulations. So again, if you are in a flood zone of your project and your project is classified as a substantial improvement or a new home construction, and you plan to add 1,200 square feet onto your home to your existing 1,200 square foot home, and it's classified as substantial improvement, that additional 1,200 square feet will have to be raised up to the flood level that's determined by the FEMA regulations. So can you imagine that? You're trying to add on to your square footage and you have to have a stairway 3 steps up and part of your home is on piers and the rest of it isn't. I've personally dealt with this in the past and have had to fight the cities and in some cases the FEMA regulations to not have to be to conform to this. So this is the kind of thing you want to know before you buy the property. This is the kind of thing you want to know before you begin design. If you already own the property, you may want to relocate the structure outside of the flood zone if you have a big enough parcel. I want you to really keep that in mind. Crossing the 50% threshold doesn't just mean your addition needs to meet code. It can mean your entire home needs upgrades, fire sprinklers, electrical energy efficiency, accessibility, and even fixing nonconformities in your existing home that you never planned to touch. So these costs add up fast. I've seen projects increase by $50,000 to $150,000 because of the classification, or quite honestly, get completely killed and have to redesign. Now, before you panic, let me give you the good news. There are strategies to navigate this. You can design your project to stay under the threshold. You can phase your work over time, or you can plan for these costs from the beginning. Let's talk about how to strategically approach the classification. All right, so how do you navigate this minefield? Let me give you 3 strategic approaches, and I want you to think about which one makes the most sense for your situation. The first one is simply to deliberately design your project to stay below the classification. Calculate your threshold before you design. If you have 1,800 square feet and the 50% rule applies, keep your addition under 900 square feet. This may require creative design to maximize space with the constraint. You get what you can build versus what you might want. So the 50% rule is one thing in general, but remember, you're going to want to talk with your city planning department to understand their project classification process for the 50% rule, because it may not just be square footage. If you think, oh, I'm just going to add 500 square feet, but I'm going to remodel the entire house, rip all the siding off, put all new windows, rip off the roof, put a new roof on, put a new front porch on. These are all the things that are going to be considered as part of the 50% valuation. Strategy 2, phase your project. So the second strategy is to phase your work over time. Now, you have to be careful here because in some cases, if it's a FEMA-regulated project, you may have a problem doing that unless you plan to phase it out over multiple years. So do your addition now and other improvements later, outside of that look-back period I just mentioned, if your city has a look-back period. The look-back period usually is triggered when you're under the FEMA rules and regulations, but some cities do use that as well. So this requires understanding your city's specific look-back rules. The risk, rules might change between phases. The benefit, it spreads costs over time. If you were to consider doing that, doing a master plan with your design professional is a really good idea, because this will help you determine if your project in the future phases are not impacted by the existing work that you're planning to do for your phase one. And I spoke about that in the design process, about doing a master plan, because I'm sure you have a million ideas. And if you're living in a flood zone, or if you're living in a city that has these rules and regulations, this could be a really smart strategy. Because if you do a master plan, you're planning to add on a second story or at the back of the house, plan to replace all the windows, there's a certain design strategy there by doing a master plan and then phasing it out to understand the impact of one versus the other, so that you're not forced to redo work that you did a couple years ago. Some homeowners do their addition first, then wait 2 or 3 years to do the interior models or other improvements. This can work, but you need to know your city's look back period. If they have a 5-year cumulative rule, phasing over 3 years won't help you. So here's the caution with this strategy. Some homeowners try to game the system by doing work without permits to avoid the cumulative calculation. It's a terrible idea. You'll pay penalties. You might have to undo work, and you put your home's resale value at risk. Don't do it. Of course, there's strategy 3, plan and budget for the full compliance. The third strategy, and often the best one, is to accept the classification for it from the beginning. If you're crossing that threshold anyway, embrace it and plan for the cost. The benefit, your entire home gets upgraded to current standards, better safety, efficiency, and resale value. You can leverage the classification to fit existing issues while you're at it. And financing may be easier when the full scope of the work is clear and upfront. Now, this is a really important point that I want to mention. If you're finding with your design professionals that you're crossing that threshold of this 50% rule, you need to pause and sit back and think, is it a smarter approach to just demolish the entire structure and build a brand new home? Because if you're willing to accept the classification, there's a chance that it may not be more costly or may not be significantly more to demolish the entire structure and just do it and be done with it, so you can live the rest of your life in your new home. No matter which strategy you choose, this is not a DIY territory. An architect experienced in your specific city rules is critical, and you knowing that you may fall into this category is the objective here today. Whether you're in a flood zone, you're planning a major renovation, that's the goal here, so you know to ask the right questions. Because your design professionals may not know to investigate that until it's too late. So we want them to calculate the classification threshold during the initial design, not after. A building department pre-application meeting is essential. Get the classification determination in writing, budget for professional help. It pays for itself and avoided surprises. So this is exactly why we're launching the BuildQuest application, our AI assistant planning platform with Quinn, your project guide. Quinn will help you understand the classification rules specific to your city and make sure you're asking the right questions during your discovery phase as questions are being posed to you by Quinn. You can reserve your spot for that beta testing at buildquest.co, which is a little congregation of homeowners, design and construction pros that I'm going to be reaching out to come late spring, early summer to beta test for free and see what they think. So your 3 strategic approaches: design under the threshold, phase your project carefully, or embrace the full compliance and budget for it, and consider just demolishing your entire home and rebuilding it. The worst approach, ignoring classification and hoping it doesn't come up. I guarantee you it will come up, and by then it's too late to adjust. This brings us to the end of our Understanding Design Limitations series. So over the past 11 episodes, we've covered every major restriction that can affect your project. Well, maybe not. I'm going to think of a few more, but this is the big ones. This is the big ones. So some other ones I'm in the back of my mind are dealing with trees, protected trees, dealing with parking restrictions that could really affect a project in an urban or suburban location. But this is the core limitation Action series that if you review all of these episodes, read all of the blog posts about this, because in the blog posts, I expand even more on this, and you will be an empowered homeowner to tackle your project right out of the chute and not waste time and money on design or even construction. And this classification rule, it's kind of the capstone, the rule that can make all the other restrictions even more important. So let's wrap this up. Here's what we've covered today. Project classification determines whether your remodel is treated as a remodel or as a new construction. The 50% rule is the most common trigger, but it's calculated differently by every jurisdiction, and FEMA can dip their toes into this as well. That can add a whole nother layer of complexity. Crossing that threshold can add tens of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of dollars to your project through fire sprinklers, system upgrades, full compliance, and could significantly impact the actual design of your project, as I mentioned, where you may have to elevate your structure, or you may want to think about tearing down your whole structure. But with strategic planning during the discovery phase, you can design around these thresholds or budget for them appropriately. The key takeaway, you need to understand classification before you design, not after you submit plans. And with that, we've reached the end of our Understanding Design Limitations series. Over episode 31 through 41, I think I snuck one in there about project planning and the process to do that, because I wanted you to get a refresher on that. And we've covered everything that can constrain your design: zoning, FAR, setbacks, height restrictions, lot coverage, easements, trees, parking coming soon, HOAs, and now project classification. And I want to point out one other thing that you might want to look into, and that is, how are your property taxes going to be impacted by your project classification? We'll be doing a future episode on that, but keep in mind that if your project is classified as a new home, even though it's not, your county assessor may use that to reassess the entire building. Not necessarily at market value, but they will reassess all of the square footage to adjust your property taxes. So when you know these rules up front, during that critical discovery phase we've talked about early in this podcast, and I refreshed on it recently, you can design with them rather than against them. And that's the awakened homeowner approach. Enlighten yourself about the rules, empower yourself to make informed decisions, and protect yourself from costly surprises. Keep in mind that I have a book that I've published called The Awakened Homeowner, same title of this podcast and the platform and the website. And I have this design limitation series in there along everything else that you need to consider before you do a project. And it's a great resource to sit back and read and absorb. And you can always find it on Amazon. And don't forget, we're launching BuildQuest, and that's going to be a project planning platform for homeowners, something that's not out there today, for you to take charge, not feel like you're being forced into different platforms or different solutions that maybe a specific builder has or a specific designer has. This is your own home that you're going to be able to invite them to, and you guys can share all the resources and the communications. And lastly, if you found this series valuable, I'd love to hear from you. And you can reach out on Instagram at The Awakened Homeowner. You can see me on Facebook. I post these on Facebook and YouTube as well, where you can make comments and criticize me, whatever you want to do. But it's good to know, like, which design limitations surprised you the most, or share your own classification story, or maybe design limitations I haven't even talked about that I haven't thought of yet. By this exchange, other homeowners see this, and it also gives me new, fresh topics to talk about that are currently happening today. So if this episode helped you avoid a costly mistake, share it with someone who's planning a remodel, please. That's how we protect homeowners from the Ben and Jane scenario my little story that I've written that's on the podcast and in the book. And I think it's even on the YouTube where I narrate this story. That's a really good way to capture all of this into how it affects real life scenarios. Now, what's going to happen in the future here with the podcast is I'm going to start working on explaining to you how architectural plans work and their systems and the conventions that they use so that you can start becoming educated. Now, that's going to be a little bit difficult in a podcast, all audio episode, so I might sneak in some YouTube presentations, but there's a large following now on the podcast, so I'm going to do my best to just give you some insight on understanding plans, but I'm also going to be inserting other relevant topics throughout the rest of this podcast as we approach year one of this episode in mid-April. So that's a wrap today. I'm Bill Reed, your home building coach. Thanks for joining me for this Understanding Design Limitations series. And remember, you don't know what you don't know, but now you do. So let's make it happen.